It's Friday, the 26th of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Steve Blake. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and CoolZor123. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like CoolZor123 and sponsor the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a daily sponsor. Thank you to everyone who has done that, of course, and thanks go out to Moneyball, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. If you live in Australia or if you live in New Zealand, make sure you're checking out Moneyball and playing in all the exciting DFS contests that they've got happening over there. We are back for a Friday show, going to be talking about all the games from Thursday, previewing the 8 games for Friday. So, no more wasting time.
Let's get to it.
On Instagram on Thursday, we were looking at Jabari Parker. How many combined points and rebounds would Jabari get? He got 28, and no one guessed that correctly. So the jackpot of pride, the prize of pride, jackpots until tomorrow. On Facebook, we're looking at Shelvin Mack. How many combined points and assists he would get? The total was 11. Joe Ricciardo got that correct, and Tomasi Tulia goes back-to-back on our Facebook contest, and he got guessed 11 as well. On Friday, we're looking for, on Instagram, Al Jefferson combined points and rebounds. And on Facebook, Emmanuel Mudiay combined points, assists, and turnovers. You'll see those posts go up during the day, and leave your guesses below and tag your mates in it and get involved in the conversation. Yeah, cool. Oh yeah, better tell you where to find that. Instagram is redrock_bball and Facebook is facebook.com/redrockbasketball. I knew I was forgetting something there. Let's get straight into the action because there were some monstrous performances. You are still, and look, actually, before we get into that, apologies for yesterday's audio podcast. There was a technical issue with the podcast being pushed out from Blog Talk Radio. It was out of my control and didn't find out really that it was an ongoing issue until the morning. So I do apologize for the delay. And thanks to everyone who let me know there was a problem getting the podcast, but it is all fixed now if you want to go back and listen to a day old information. And it was always, if that happens, you can always go and listen to it on YouTube. It was available there as well. Which, if you watch on YouTube, you know that already. So that is another option if you find the audio version isn't working. So I do apologize for that technical snafu that we had. Let's get into the monstrous line of the night. If you are watching the podcast, it's not a repeat. This is Friday show. It's not Thursday's because I've got the same backdrop up behind me. And that's because Steph Curry was ludicrous. Again, he was monstrous. He was any superlative that you can have. And I noticed that someone left a comment under this video already before the show started saying that Curry is overrated because of the weak defensive point guard era we're in. Seriously, mate, that's a pretty hot take. It's a little too hot for me to take on because there is no way that Steph Curry is overrated. He had 51 points. He hit 10 triples. He had 7 rebounds, 8 assists, 1 block. He went 20 of 27. That is 74% from the field. That is unbelievable. I saw an interesting stat today. Not even interesting. And there's going to be plenty of interesting stats from the Warriors season this year. A couple that I saw, Steph Curry is 10 away from breaking the all-time three-point record. I think that was the stat I saw, and it's February. The other one is in NBA history, there has been, now I'm going to get this number wrong. I think there was 7 games where a player has scored 50-plus points and hit 10-plus threes. 7 times it's happened, and Steph Curry's done it 4 times. He scored 50 twice with 10-plus threes. It's amazing that Curry doesn't have the three-point made in a game record at 12. Amazing. He is now, he's at 30.5 points, 5 triples. This was almost the same stats as yesterday, except they improved. You cannot do any better than what this guy is doing. This has got all the hallmarks of the greatest individual season of all time, not only from a fantasy point of view, from a playing point of view. He is a massive, massive chance to be the first ever unanimous MVP. Very hard to vote in a different direction, I would have thought. I can't see how you could mount a case to vote for someone else with the way that Steph is playing. He has been, he's out of control. He's a danger from anywhere on the floor. And the thing about Steph is you look at him and you go, okay, he's doing all this, but I seriously watch him play and go, he might get better. He might just start being able to pull up from half court and hit them. And then what does that do to your defense? I get that feeling that he is just going to be able to keep extending and extending his range. So it's going to be as soon as he crosses the line, he can take a shot. Maybe that's a bit fanciful, but I do really think that he can just keep evolving like that. He's just effortless. It's amazing stuff to watch the Warriors play. It's amazing to watch Steph Curry play. The waiver wire line of the night, we head to Phoenix, and Mirza Teletovic played 30 minutes. He had 30 points and 11 rebounds with 5 triples. Now, he doesn't do much in the other areas, 1 assist, 0 steals, 0 blocks, and 12 of 23 shooting. But 30 and 11 is fairly impressive from Mirza. He is owned in less than 40% of leagues. He should be one of the main guys you should be looking at owning in Phoenix. They are running some sort of weird rotation, which doesn't make a ton of sense to me in terms of their future. But yeah, we'll get to Phoenix later. I don't know what Earl Watson's doing, but there's a lot of things there that leave a lot to be desired with the way the rotation is playing out. But Teletovic, he's getting relatively consistent minutes at the moment. His last 4 games, he's giving you 20 points a game in 29 minutes and hitting 3.5 threes with 7 rebounds. The 7 rebounds, though, it's well up on what he does for the season. He's averaging 3.3 rebounds this season. And yes, the minutes are higher, but per 36, his last 4 games, he's giving you 9 boards per 36. On the season, he's at 6 boards per 36. So it's a 50% increase. That sort of thing is probably not sustainable. Even with those extra minutes, I don't think he's going to be that sort of a rebounder. He's going to be a points guy. He's going to be a three-pointer guy. And he's going to be a really good free throw shooter. And I don't imagine his field goal percentage stays at 52, which is what it currently is in this last week of action. It drops back down to that mid-40s range and becomes, you know, somewhat of a liability for a guy who might be starting to take some more shots. So have a look at that. Nice comment that comes in here on YouTube as we do this live. How do I read this? I Luvenamul. I apologize for messing up the pronunciation of your name. Nice beard. Cool. That was probably worth the wait, wasn't it? Anyway, Teletovic, if you own John Lua, he's done. Chris Humphreys, not worth it. Teletovic is the power forward to own in Phoenix, but it's going to be really tailored to that if you want threes, if you want scoring, if you want nice free throws. But the other areas, I think they're prone to dropping off. But there's no reason why he shouldn't be owned in most leagues at the moment. The young gun of the night goes to Aaron Gordon of the Orlando Magic. He's got one of the more consistent roles on any Scott Skiles team that we've seen recently. He is 30 minutes basically every night. 19 and 8, 1 3, 2 assists and 1 block on 9 of 14 shooting. We'd love him to get more minutes, but it just doesn't feel like that it's going to happen because we haven't seen it happen at all yet. He's just going to play 30, 29, 31 minutes and go from there. And you know, he's going to produce numbers. He's a top 100 player over the last month in 31 minutes. 10 and 10, half a 3, 1.3 steals, 1 block. And he's got real scope to improve his field goal percentage over that time as well. He's at 42% in the last month. His field goal percentage dropped significantly when he became a starter. For the season, he's at 46. So, you know, obviously there's room to improve there. The free throws are a concern. He's only at 61% over the last month, 50% over the last week. It's not enough to completely derail that category, but it's something that does need to be taken into consideration. But Aaron Gordon is obviously a must-own player. He is owned in only 67% of leagues, so he's around in some leagues. But I imagine that's because of some inactivity in leagues that he hasn't been owned. But make sure that he is not on your waiver wire and have a look at your team. He is set in that 30-minute role, and he's going to be producing pretty good numbers, a really good source of rebounds, really good source of defensive stats. Yesterday's podcast, I declared Danny Green as being back, and then he puts up a 0 point performance to get him the dud of the night. In 28 minutes, Green missed all 5 of his shots. He had 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 block. He'd been really good. He'd been really good. In fact, he'd been shooting 46% over the last month, 42% from 3, and didn't happen today. You're always a little bit concerned considering the way that the season started off for Danny. But I'm not looking at it and going, oh, is it time to drop Danny Green again? I think he should be owned in pretty much most leagues. Back to Mirza Teletovic. I'm getting lots of live comments coming in on YouTube, which I like. Tim Barnes adds, think of Mirza as a poor man's Ryan Anderson. I think that that's accurate, but I'd almost say that he's equivalent man's Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson's not that good. He's not that good at fantasy. That is who they are. They're both just 3-point shooters. Yeah, Anderson's probably marginally better, but I wouldn't say that he's massively better. That's the way I look at it. Yes, Anderson is marginally better, but not by a huge stretch. Back to Danny Green. I reckon that Green, he has to be owned at this point. It was a stinker, but I imagine with the way he's been playing now, we're going to get more impressive games than bad games out of him. This will happen. He's probably got the most duds of the night for the whole season, I would guess. I should have kept track of this, shouldn't I? Green, your dud of the night. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineup for Thursday. At point guard. I talked about point guard yesterday, saying there was a lot of cheap options to look at, and that would allow you to pair it with an expensive option. You could have gone with a guy like Russell Westbrook or Steph Curry, and Curry was the guy, obviously, putting up 68.4, but Westbrook was a nice option there too. And with the cheap point guards, the one who won out was Ronnie Price at 28.5. He played a stack of minutes, 37 minutes for the Suns, and put up decent production, but that's sort of expected if you're going to play 38 minutes. Again, we'll talk about that later. Evan Fournier at 31.7 and Jim Harden at 63. I highlighted both those guys yesterday. I thought they were interesting guys to target. At small forward, Kevin Durant at 59.3. And Bojan Bogdanovic, he got 22.4. He got red hot to start the game, cooled off in the second half. He's going to have an expanded role now that Joe Johnson no longer has a team. I'll keep you updated as soon as I hear which team Joe Johnson goes to, and we'll talk about it more when we get to the Nets. But Bogdanovic, at his low salary, put up 22.4. With the power forwards, Mirza Teletovic went 40.7, and Thad Young for the Nets went 51.1. And at center, Tyson Chandler, 31.7 points for a total of 396.8. That is your perfect DFS lineup for Thursday. All right, we are going to take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be back to talk. Back to talk DFS, but we're not up to that point yet. We're going to be back to go through these box scores in a little bit of extra detail and hopefully get some information and get some value out of it. All right, I've got that up on the screen for you guys now. I think have I got the right one up? I think I've shared the wrong screen with you. Let's try that again. There we go. That's better. All right, the first game that we're going to look at of the night is the Golden State Warriors and the Orlando Magic. The Warriors, pretty big victors in the end. Steph was getting so hot that Kerr let him play a bit extra. He got the 34 minutes, I guess, gunning for the 50 points. I've already talked about his big night. Draymond played 32 and went 12-4-8 with 5 steals. Productive night, nothing too exciting. And Klay Thompson only had 29 minutes for 9 points with 2 rebounds, a block, and a 3. Harry Barnes, 10-5 in 34 minutes. You know my thoughts on him by now. Not a must-own player. And Andrew Bogut played 22 minutes after a back-to-back, which is interesting that he got so many minutes. Maybe he is getting just a bit healthier. 12-4-4 for Bogut, 1 steal and 2 blocks. Really coming into his own as a fantasy player when he gets the minutes. And with Festus Ezeli out and Anderson Varejao not reliable at all, Bogut is a top 90 player over the last month in just 22 minutes. And it's because of his nice rebounding, his good field goal percentage, his above average assist rate for a center, and his really high block numbers. He's averaging 2.1 blocks in 21.5 minutes over the last month. So he can help fantasy teams. There are going to be nights when he plays 14 or 15 minutes, but over, say, the last 2 weeks or so, we've seen more instances of him playing 28 minutes than what we'd seen earlier on this season. Murray Spates had 14 points in 12 minutes. There was a stretch last season when he was doing that regularly. He'd come off the bench, he'd play 12 minutes, he'd score 16 points, and it was like, what is going on with Mo Spates? It's not happening as much this season, not happening really at all, but a nice little example of that today. Speaking of Varejao, he played 14 minutes and went 5-5-3. He doesn't really have much fantasy upside. And Andre Iguodala dished 7 assists in his 26 minutes. He only scored 2 points. He is more of a 14-team league sort of guy. On the Orlando Magic, Evan Fournier played 39 minutes, had 20 points, 3 assists, 4 steals, and 3 threes. He has to be owned everywhere. He is only owned in 70% of leagues at the moment. That is not enough. He has to be owned in more places. Scott Skiles is running him significant minutes out there. There is no threat from Mario Hezonja to his role. Nick Vucevic, 17-9 with 4 assists and 2 blocks. And the game was a blowout, so Skiles did what he usually does. Now, with the exception of Fournier, who got the 39 minutes. Vucevic went down to 32. Victor Oladipo went down to 30 when they'd been getting 35, 36. That's what Skiles does. Game's out of hand. 5-6 minutes get lopped off the starters almost every time. Ersan Ilyasova had 8-4 in his 16 minutes. He is obviously a 14-16 team lead guy in that minute, in that role. And the point guard situation is as unclear as ever. Lord Alfred Payton had his best game since the trade went down. 29 minutes, 12-2-6 with 2 triples and a steal on 5 of 8 shooting. What does this mean? We've seen 2 games where Brandon Jennings was the main guy, well, 1 game where it was CJ Watson, and now another game where it's Payton. I don't know what Skiles is thinking. I wish I could understand what Scott Skiles was thinking half the time, but I can't. I think that what's happened is that Jennings played some decent minutes and Skiles got excited for his former player, but he saw that he's not the same guy. He saw that the Achilles injury has robbed him of a lot. And the last 2 games, he's been really limited. Jennings played 12 minutes here for 5 points and 2 steals. And then he tried a bit with Watson, who was okay. And now he's gone back to Payton, getting some extra run. Now, Payton is not a must-own player because of his deficiencies, and he only suits certain specific teams. But if I'm one of those specific teams, I would have held him anyway. And I'm holding him now to see how this all plays out. He is available on waiver-wise. He's down to 75% ownership, so he could be around. Just don't just blindly add him to your team. Look at what the impact is. Can you take on the lack of scoring? Can you take on the free throws and the field goal percentage dip that you're almost invariably going to take from him? On to Jennings. No point with him in a 12-team league anymore. That's 2 stinkers in a row. And the other 2 games were decent, but we thought maybe he's trending up. But in fact, they've been the high point of his tenure in Orlando. Victor Oladipo struggled. He went 5 of 16, had 14 and 6 though. 2 threes, 2 assists, 2 steals. Just not a good shooting night from Oladipo. He had been on fire before that, so I'm not overly worried. And I think he'll bounce back in the next game. Mario Hezonja got 15 minutes, 3-3 with a triple. He feels like he's especially with Scott Skiles around, feels like he's quite a distance away from making a fantasy impact. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics. Chris Middleton, 21-5-6 with 3 steals and a 3-pointer. Really, really impressed with Middleton this season, especially his ability to get assists. Not something that was really associated with his game before. He is up to 4.1 assists for the season, but more impressively, over the last 2 months, he's at 4.8, so almost 5 assists a game. Last year, he was at 2.3. Now, he's playing 6 more minutes a game. It was criminal that kid wouldn't play him minutes last year. That was ludicrous. But he has improved in so many areas this year. He's scoring more. He's assisting more, obviously. His steal rate has fallen slightly from last season. But with the minutes increase, you're almost getting the same steals from him. His field goal percentage has also dropped too, but he's an elite free throw shooter. He's giving you almost 2 triples a game with 1.5 steals, 4 assists, 4 rebounds, and 18 points. Being a real real eye-opener to me. Fantastic. I thought that he was set for a bit of a drop-off with Jabari Parker returning, but not so much. Greg Monroe off the bench played 34 minutes, went 28-4, a steal, 2 blocks. That's a really good Greg Monroe night. I just wish that he was starting because it just feels like there's less variability in his role, but you'll take that. You obviously haven't dropped him anywhere. Jabari Parker, big minutes again. He played 37, had 5 fouls, went 22-6 with 2 assists and a steal. And Giannis Antetokounmpo went 14-7-8 with a steal and 3 blocks and continues to put up really solid numbers. No Jared Bayless. No John Henson as expected. So we saw Miles Plumlee get another start. Only 14 minutes for Plumlee with 5 points and a block. He is strictly a let's stream in if I need a block sort of player, and maybe it works out. No point unless you're in like a 20-team league aside from that. Michael Carter-Williams played 33 minutes off the bench, 12-3-3. He's getting 30-plus minutes, I think in part because Bayless is out. OJ Mayo stunk, but he was in foul trouble yet again. He had 4 fouls in under 20 minutes, 3 points, did have a triple 1-2 assists, so not terrible numbers, but hard to evaluate what kid's doing at the point guard position with the way that Mayo is accumulating fouls. I think that's 8 or 9 fouls he's had in the last 2 games, and it is restricting his playing time. So he's not a 12-team league guy. He's only owned in 6% of the league, so most of you agree with me in that sort of area. But in a 14-team league, I think he's an okay guy to look at, and just for the short term, and see, look, maybe if he doesn't have foul trouble, maybe he goes back to 29 minutes, which he had the previous game before those 2 where he had the foul issues, and he was relatively productive. So he is a guy just to keep an eye on and see what happens, because that also might mean that Carter Williams drops 2 or 3 minutes. and comes back down, and Rashad Vaughan loses some playing time, and Tyler Ennis doesn't get the 5 minutes that he got here. On the Celtics, Jay Crowder, foul trouble limited him, but he was still super productive. 20 and 8, 2 triples and 2 assists in his 23 minutes. He shot 8 of 10 from the field. And yeah, just a really, really good night again. Isaiah Thomas with one of the greatest assists you'll ever see. Make sure you check out that. It was a driving behind the back, behind the head actually, no look pass to a kick out 3-point shooter. I think it was Crowder actually. Fantastic pass from Isaiah Thomas. 33 minutes for him, 27, 7 assists, 2 steals and 2 triples. And Avery Bradley had 18 points and added 2 dimes and 2 steals as well. Amir Johnson finally back over 20 minutes, 25 minutes there, 15 and 8 with a steal and a block on 7 of 9 shooting. I do not trust him though for 12 team leagues. I don't trust Brad Stevens with his role, so he's not someone that I'm looking to go and snag. 31 minutes for Jared Sullinger. He has been a lot more reliable with Khalil Linux injury, 14 and 10 with no other stats, but has to be owned everywhere. And then we saw Marcus Smart have a real stinker, 3-1-1 in his 25 minutes, 0-4 from the field. But there'll be better nights in store for Marcus Smart. Evan Turner, just another solid performance, 8-4-4 with 3 steals. The 2-of-9 shooting is not good, but still just enough to be hanging around as a 12-team league guy. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans is the next game. The Pelicans with a big, big win. The Thunder, I think they're in a little bit of trouble at the moment. KD 32-14-7 with 3 triples and 2 blocks. Russ went 44-4-9 with 3 triples. And Serge Ibaka had 15-5 with 2 blocks. That's the 3 main guys there for the Thunder. The rest of the team is just not good. Andre Robertson played 22 minutes and had no stats. Points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, nothing. He has no fantasy value whatsoever. Steve Adams played 20 minutes and went 8-5 with a block. Deion Waiters played 30 minutes and went 8-2-5 with 2 steals and 2 threes. And I think my theory about him is correct, that he plays better as a sixth man rather than as a starter. He just seems to be able to do more things rather than as a starter. He sort of sits around and doesn't do a lot. Now, I don't like what Billy Donovan's doing with this team. Randy Foy is the backup point guard now. Campaign out of the rotation. I couldn't be less impressed with that move if I tried. Now, Payne had been playing so well that DJ Augustine was not used. He was not needed. And Augustine's a better player than Foy. So why, when Augustine gets traded for Foy, does Payne fall out of the rotation? Payne gets things done. Payne can play next to Westbrook. Payne can create. Payne can shoot. Yeah, Foy can shoot too, but you have to develop your young players at some point as well, especially when they're playing better than the veterans that are there, like what Payne had been doing. Let's hope he doesn't continue to fall out of the rotation, but I talked about it yesterday when we saw his minutes drop to about 4 or 5 and Foy played big minutes, that I'm a bit worried about what he's going to be able to do this season. He's not a 12-team league guy anyway. He's not a 14-team league guy. He's more of a consideration for dynasties, and this doesn't change anything about his dynasty value, but it's just, I don't know. It's a baffling move. Steven Adams played 20 minutes and went 8-5. Foul trouble limited him. Enes Kanter only got 18 minutes, and he went 8 points with 1 rebound and 1 block. 1 rebound for Enes Kanter is a little bit surprising. He's normally quite good on the boards, especially offensively. So, yeah, Enes Kanter's owned in 76% of leagues. That's way too high, in my opinion. I don't think he should be owned in that many leagues. Yes, he would have been drafted in quite a few, and some of those teams, again, inactive, but it still feels like it's way too high. His season rank is 127th, which is all right, but it's not must-own 12-team league by any stretch. 12 points, 7.6 rebounds, and negligible steals and blocks, assists, and nice percentages. So there are some positives to his game, but I don't think he's a 76% ownership guy. On the Pelicans, Drew Holiday only played 26 minutes here, but still was great. 22-1-9, 1 steal and 2 triples on 8 of 12 shooting. And Anthony Davis was great too. 30-6, 2 triples, 1 steal, 4 blocks. And then my mate, Norris Cole. 35 minutes for Norris after looking like trash previously. He went crazy. 21-6-8 for Cole. 2 3-pointers on 7 of 14 shooting and hit all 5 of his free throws. That is great. That's great if you own Norris Cole. That's great if you'd stuck with him, because that's a really nice line. I don't buy it at all. He is in the last month. He's ranked similarly to Kanter. He's 130th over the last month, averaging 13.6 points, which, again, you look at it and go, that's all right. It's not bad. It's still below average. It's still not an above-average performance. Yeah, 0.8 threes, 3.2 rebounds, 5.4 assists has been nice for him, definitely. But with the way he'd been playing and the way he was trending down, it was not looking great for him. But with Bryce DeJean-Jones out with a fractured wrist, there's got to be extra minutes available, and he's going to have to get them. So instead of playing 27 minutes, he's going to have to go back to 30, 32, and that's going to make him more appealing for 12-team leagues. He's going to have to get stats by brute force, just by playing minutes. I'm accumulating stats because I'm standing on the court. Now, some players aren't able to do that. Alonzo G being one of them, who started and played 23 minutes and failed to take a single shot again. But Cole will take shots. He'll take bad ones, but he's going to get this bigger role now that DeJean-Jones is out. With him out and with Eric Gordon still out, although Gordon is due to return very soon, which hopefully nullifies Cole's role to a degree and allows, you know, Drew and Eric Gordon to play the bulk of the minutes in the backcourt, and that will drop Cole back down. So to me, he's not a must-own guy, but maybe the next one or two games he's going to have slightly increased value. Dante Cunningham played 42 minutes, 10-6 with 2 triples and 2 steals for Cunningham. You can leave him in for deeper leagues only. And Tony Douglas thought he'd get a bit of an increased role with DeJean-Jones out, but only played 14 minutes, 12-4 with 2 triples and a steal. And he must be left alone for most standard leagues, or all standard leagues actually, and looked at only deeper leagues. Now, talking about Ryan Anderson before, he played 26 minutes here, 26-6 with 2 triples on 11 of 22 shooting. So that's a really nice night from Ryan Anderson, but he is as inconsistent as they come in terms of his fantasy output. Over the course of the season, he's ranked 83rd. He's 123rd over the last month. He gives you 16 points, a bit less than 2 triples, less than 5 rebounds, you know, bad field goal percentage, high free throw percentage. He is basically Mirza Teletovic as I think it was Tim. I hope it was Tim that commented it before. But yeah, slightly better, but not much. And if Teletovic was to play 30 minutes, I reckon you'd find their numbers become eerily similar. With no Omer Asik, we saw Kendrick Perkins play 13 minutes and Alexei Ajinsa play 19. Ajinsa grabbed 7 boards and had 2 blocks in that time. And I just wish that we could see a situation where he would get 30 minutes and play, because I know that he can be a productive guy. Just wish that Dante Cunningham wasn't getting minutes, or Alonzo G. The Brooklyn Nets and the Phoenix Suns, what an affront to basketball this game was. But still, the Nets with a big, big victory on the road. The Suns are horrific. They stink. They are brutal. Anyway, on to the Nets. Thad Young was brilliant. 18-8, 3 assists, 7 steals, 3 blocks. He was very close to knocking Steph Curry off the monstrous line of the night. Thrown very close, Thad. And Bojan Bogdanović, he moved into the starting lineup in place of Joe Johnson, finished with 24 points and had 3 triples, 2 rebounds, and no other stats. And that is not going to be an abnormal stat line for him. He hit all 5 of his free throws. He went 8 of 16 from the field. But I don't imagine that 50% shooting is going to be the norm for him. I don't think that there's much 12-team value in whoever replaces Joe Johnson. It's going to be Bojan Bogdanović for the time being. Markel Brown played 25 minutes. Wayne Ellington played 23 minutes. I don't think any of them are going to be real 12-team league guys. You can go and add Bogdanović for now and see how it works out. Markel Brown's the guy I've really got my eye on. He played 25 minutes here and went 16-3 with 2 triples, an assist, and a steal. What I like about him is he's not just a scorer or shooter. He can get rebounds, and he can get steals as well. So that's where he has that slight advantage over Bogdanović if they were to play similar minutes. At the moment, they're not, so that restricts Brown, but he's a guy that I'm watching. Don Sloan, after about 3 or 4 straight games of 30 minutes, only played 24 here, and Shane Larkin got more run. I don't know what to make of that. 13-9-6 for Sloan. I think he's going to get more usage and be able to put up more stats without Johnson there. He should be owned in 12-team leagues. Larkin looked okay. 11 points with 6 assists and 1 steal. And as dumb as it sounds, I still think that Larkin is the better player. And if they were to give him 30 minutes, he would be the better fantasy producer. But that's not what's happening, so we can leave him alone. Brook Lopez played 30 minutes and went 12-6 with a steal and a block. Not his best night, obviously, and not much else to really report on the Nets side of things. On to the Suns, a team that is this bad, this terrible. Why are you playing Ronnie Price 38 minutes, Tyson Chandler 33 minutes, and leaving guys like Alex Len to get 17 off the bench? Why are you leaving Devin Booker only at 30 minutes? Why is Archie Goodwin playing just 18 minutes? I don't understand the logic. The most egregious one to me is Len. Play him. He's your future. Tyson Chandler's not your future. Okay, you probably can say that Chandler's a better player than Len. I could also argue that he's not, because he hasn't been good this year. Now, he was decent here, 12 and 11, two steals and a block. That's fine. Len also went for 13 and 6 in his 17 minutes. That's pretty good production too. Len has got the ability to get better. Chandler doesn't. Your team is going nowhere. You need to see what you've got in Len. You invested a top 5 draft pick in him. You've never given him a chance to be a prolonged starter. Yes, some of that is injury related, but some of that is also mismanagement. And I don't understand this run of playing Ronnie Price 38 minutes. Like, what are you doing? Why is Ronnie Price playing 38 minutes? And Price was okay. 16 points, 3 assists, 4 steals, 2 triples. He can get steals. He can be a really good streaming option for steals. Would I look to add Ronnie Price in a 12-team league? I own him in a 30-team league. I would look at him in a 14-team league, sure. But this is the first time that he's played more minutes than Phil Pressey over the last 3 games. And he played a significant amount here. But it is the first time that it's happened. Now, does it stick that way? I don't know if it stays at that sort of distribution, but it's something to keep an eye on. For now, he's not a must-own 12-team league guy by any stretch. John Lua, Earl Watson hates him. 5 minutes, 4 points, he is done. He can be dropped. Chris Humphreys started and grabbed 10 boards in 11 minutes and nothing else. Missed all 9 of his shots. That is not good from Chris Humphreys. He will be better than that, but in the minutes he's going to get, he's not going to be much of a relevancy. And Archie Goodwin can be dropped in all 12-team leagues, I think. 18 minutes for him. 0 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Devin Booker is very close to being a drop guy as well. In fact, I think he's probably already there. But as I always say, there's no one who's just a drop guy. You need to have someone to add. So have a look to see who's around. But Booker is really struggling at the moment. He is, over the last month, he's averaging 14.5 points on 36% shooting and 3.8 assists. But over the last week, he's at 9 points, 3 assists, 1.3 triples on 26%. Now, I think that the shooting percentage will go back up. So he's not an outright must drop guy or anything like that. But it's not looking great for him. Now, I know a lot of people are very high on him. He's the youngest player in the draft. I know that. Everyone's very quick to compare him to Klay Thompson. He reminds me of Klay Thompson. He's going to be Klay Thompson. He's got a Klay Thompson game. That's fine. But you're comparing him to the second best shooter in the league. The chances of him not becoming Klay Thompson are exceptionally higher than... No, sorry, try again. Yeah, the chances of him not becoming Klay Thompson are exceptionally higher than the chances of him actually becoming Klay Thompson. His absolute ceiling is Klay Thompson, but it's not a likely outcome. So we're very quick to put labels and comparisons on guys, and he's had some decent stretches, but I wouldn't say he's been great or awesome or fantastic for big stretches of time. I think he can be really good, but I'm not sure that we put these descriptors on guys and say, oh, Klay Thompson, just thinking that he's going to be Klay Thompson. And we fail to realize how good Klay Thompson actually is, how good of a shooter he is, and how well he fits into what the Warriors do, and how good his defense is. And Booker is a long way away from that. Yes, he's a lot younger than him, but we're very quick to put those labels on. So Booker's a guy that, yeah, not quite a must-own guy at this point. The shooting percentage will go up. It won't stay at 26. If it goes back to 42, 43, that sort of range, then the points rise back up. The threes rise back up. But there is definitely a part of me that's going, not sure you need to hold on to Devin Booker. John Jenkins made his son's debut. He played 4 minutes for 2 points, and Sonny Weems got 3 minutes. I'm not sure why Sonny Weems was signed by this team in the first place, let alone playing minutes. That was potentially the oddest signing of the offseason, aside from Saša Vujačić. The Houston Rockets and the Portland Trailblazers, massive win from the Rockets, huge comeback. Jim Harden just destroyed down the stretch. He played 46 minutes out of a possible 48, went 46, 5, and 8, 4 triples and 2 steals. For as bad as he's been, he's also been awesome. And I say bad as in on-court defense and, you know, character and conditioning and all that sort of stuff. His fantasy production's been amazing. He's been he's awesome. Trevor Ariza shut down Damian Lillard to a degree, especially when he went on to him. 41 minutes for Ariza, 6-8-6 with 5 steals and a 3. The 1 of 10 shooting hurts, but you love the other numbers that he gave you. And Pat Beverley had 14-6-1 with 2 triples and 2 steals in his 24 minutes. He is really making a case that he should be owned in way more leagues than he is. He's currently owned in 45% of leagues. That feels too low. Dwight had a very full line, 19-13, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 8 of 10 shooting, and you don't care that Dwight went 3 of 12 from the free throw line. You know that that's a problem. You do not care. You love everything else that he gave you, and that is that's one of the best performances of the night. Ty Lawson was restricted to 6 minutes because he is just crap, as is Josh Smith, as is Terrence Jones. There's just a lot of players on this team who are really bad, but they got the victory. Montrezl Harrell got 16 minutes with Clint Capella out with a sprained right ankle, and a big shout out. Now, just who was it that I'm giving a shout out to? Get his name right. At Thane Reed on Twitter, who alerted me during the day that Capella wasn't going to be playing. I think it was probably the first you would have seen of it. Anyway, so Thane Reed, big ups for getting me that information about Clint Capella being out. DFS wise, it didn't really benefit us much because, you know, Jones, Smith, Harrell didn't do anything, but Howard was able to play 37 minutes. So that was an intriguing part of it. On the Blazers, Dame Lillard, 23-6-7. Not his best shooting night, going 6 of 20. And CJ McCollum had 25-4 with 2 triples. Al-Farouq Aminu really took advantage of the Houston bump. He'd been struggling, but 13-6 with 2 assists and 3 triples is a nice line. And Ed Davis grabbed 12 boards in his 19 minutes for a really, really nice performance. Mo Harkless's little run appears like it's done. He had 11 points in 19 minutes, which is still okay and better than what he was doing at the start of the year. But I'm not really sure that that's our 12-team worthy. And Mason Plumlee back into Terry Stotts' good books and back into the fantasy community's good books, hopefully. 10-4, a steal, a block, 2 assists. He's only owned in 58% of leagues, so he's available. His minutes are trending back up, and he is producing. Noel Vonleh continues to do nothing, and just I'm not convinced he is good. And Myers Leonard, 11 minutes, been a massive disappointment this season. There is no point in owning him in any sort of 12-team format. The last game of the night is the San Antonio Spurs and the Utah Jazz. The Spurs got a big victory again, shut the Jazz down completely. Now, we had Kawhi Leonard going 29-5-3 with 3 threes and 3 steals. Timmy Duncan played 32 minutes after a stinker yesterday. He went 14-11 with a steal and a block, so he still got it. But the problem with Duncan is that it's just not going to happen, you know, often enough for us to rely upon consistently. Tony Parker's playing pretty well, and I don't know if many people realize that he is playing well at the moment. 16-3-6. With 2 triples. Tony Parker is owned in 67% of leagues. That's ridiculous to me. He should be owned in way more than that. He's not an awesome player, but he should be owned in more than 67%. LaMarcus Aldridge, 15-7 with a block, and that's a solid night. And Patty Mills cooled off after a pretty good run as well. 11 points with 3 triples. Kyle Anderson still got some good run. 17 minutes, not the 29 that he got the game before, but not a good night from Anderson. He missed all 4 of his shots and had 3 rebounds and a block. He will he'll be better at times, he'll be worse at times, but just interesting to see that he is getting that role. He played more than Rasul Butler, he played more than Jonathan Simmons as well, and that's 3 straight decent minutes games from Kyle Anderson. Rudy Gobert, terrible again, 8-6 with 1 block, really been a disappointing stretch here for Gobert. It's sort of to be expected against the Spurs, but still not great if you spent that early second round pick on him. Derek Favors is great, 25-6 with 2 steals, and Rod Hood went 12-3-6 with 2 triples as well. Shelvin Mack, I touched on earlier, he played 28 minutes as the starter, went 8-3-3 with 2 steals. These numbers aren't great, but I still think that you want to own him in a 12-team league. I'd rather have him than, say, Ronnie Price, but if it's between him and Pat Beverley, I reckon they're fairly even. Gordy Haywood, not his best night. Kawhi, that's an issue. 4 of 13 for 11 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. And the rest of the point guards between Hull Neto and Trey Burke, 9 points, 4 to Neto, 5 to Burke, and not much else there. And also not much happening on the bench for the Utah Jazz. We are done on that section of the podcast where we talk about the games from Thursday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk DFS for Friday. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. back, we're going to be talking DFS for Friday. There are 8 games on the slate. And before we get into that, I just want to give you a quick heads up and alert you to a new feature we've got on Basketball Monster for the DFS projections. If you look over on the left-hand side of the screen when you're doing it, under the games played, there's a section called the optional what-if scenarios. And what that is we go through and have a look at the games. I'll read the exact explanation we've got on the site. We choose a few scenarios each day to show the users an approximate projections in case they happen. These projections are based on only estimates, and then more specific projections are generated when the scenario actually occurs. So what that means is if someone is questionable, so like in the first game we're looking at, the Charlotte Hornets and Indiana Pacers, Rodney Stuckey is questionable with a foot injury. So if you go on the left-hand side of the page, you can see where it says Indiana, and there's a drop-down menu, and you can choose one option that says Rodney Stuckey out, and you can do another option that says Rodney Stuckey playing. And that enables you to see how we expect the minutes to be distributed if Stuckey plays, or if Stuckey is out, and then it will adjust the DFS projections that way. So that's a new feature we've got on Basketball Monster at the moment, just another one of the many things we have for DFS, as well as all our seasonal league tools as well. So I do encourage you to check that out. We're just rolling it out for the first time today, been testing a little bit with it, and doing some back-end stuff and playing around. But now we've got these scenarios happening. There's always room for improvement. It's always open to suggestions or how you think it works. But we're looking at it in that situation where if a guy is questionable, which by definition is 50% chance that they play, we look at, okay, what happens if they play? What happens if they don't play? And now you can bring up both of those scenarios on the screen and work out where the minutes get distributed in our opinion. This first game of the night, there is 8 of them, the Charlotte Hornets and the Indiana Pacers. I talked about Rod Stuckey. He's been out for quite a while. He is questionable to return. He did participate in practice, so there's a good chance he's in. CJ Miles won't play. He's dealing with that calf problem yet again. He's relatively slow healer. On the Hornets side of things, Spencer Hawes is questionable with his back issues. That's another one of the scenarios we've created. Is Hawes playing, Hawes not? And then the projections will be balanced that way. At point guard, Kemba Walker is at 8,400. Just not able to really get to that value enough for me. The matchup recently, the Pacers have been giving point guards some pretty decent scores, but I don't love it here. I don't love the situation, and I don't love the salary for him. George Hill's at 5,700. He's not a guy that I'm all that keen on either, and I don't think there's much love for either of those point guards, to be honest. At shooting guard, Monte Ellis is at 6,300. I don't think you really love Monte from a tournament point of view, but for a cash game scenario, at 6,300... you think that there's a pretty good chance that Monte can get 30 points. I don't think he's the best option on the board, but he can't be totally ruled out. Nick Batum's at 6,700. He hasn't really been doing enough as of late. 27 points, 26 points. That's not great at 6,700, but I get the feeling that a big Nick Batum game's coming. So to me, he's worth a look in a tournament here. I think that we know that he's got 45, 50-point upside. He is definitely worth a look. Courtney Lee at 3,600. The salary is really appealing. He put up 21 points in the last game at 30 minutes. I think 30 minutes is sort of around the area that he's going to get, but his production has not been great. If he gives you 21 points at 3,600, that's over 5x value. So you're relatively happy with that. Do you think he can get 17 points, 18 points? If he can, then he's going to make value. So if you're trying to fit some other high-priced guys in, he's not a horrible guy to look at, because I think that 17 points feels like a pretty safe estimate for him. Jeremy Lin, 4,600. I don't trust him in his role here with his team, with Lee now there. Jeremy Lamb, no thanks. And Rod Stuckey, not playing him in his first game back. Probably wouldn't play him anyway, but definitely not in his first game back. The small forwards, Paul George is at 8,800. I love it here. This is a really good matchup. He's been putting up big numbers, averaging 42 across his last 5. You always know there's a chance that he goes for 55 plus. I love Paul George here, cash and tournaments, and no other small forwards are really worth talking about. At power forward, we look at Miles Turner, who's yet to crack the 6,000. He's at 5,800. He's 30-point average across his last 3, dropped 32 in the last game, being just consistently around that 29 to 30 mark. The matchup for the Pacers, going up against the Hornets. The Hornets are allowing pretty good numbers against power forwards. I think that 30 points, you almost can lock that in for Miles Turner at this point, and 30 minutes as well. So he is worth looking at. 5,600 for Marvin Williams on the other side of things. 46 for Cody Zeller. Definitely don't like Zeller with the way that his minutes have been, you know, in that low to mid-20s. And Williams is sort of in the mid to high 20s. He's not overly productive at 5,600. He's averaging 28 across the last three, which is all right, but yeah, Miles Turner, Yan Mihimi, that defensive front court is going to limit teams pretty significantly. At center, Yan Mihimi at 5,000. The minutes look like they're going to be there. The matchup is really pleasing. 25 points, I reckon sign me up for Yan Mihimi at 5,000. He can go for 30 and give you 6x value, so I do like him here. Jordan Hill, 4,100, probably not. Al Jefferson is 5,500. He is 500 more than Yan Mihimi. I would rather have Mihimi every day of the week than Jefferson at this point, especially with the way the Hornets are, you're leeching points to big men. Now, with Al Jefferson, we had him as the Facebook guy. I think it was the Facebook guy. No, it wasn't. It was the Instagram player. Combined points and rebounds. And if I have a look at what our current projections are for Al Jefferson for tomorrow, we're projecting him for 10 points and 6 rebounds. So maybe use that as somewhat of a hint. Don't know if 16 will come true, but that's what we've currently got him projected. All these things changes depending, again, on the status of Spencer Hawes. So if you want to use that Spencer Hawes out scenario and see how we project Al Jefferson then maybe you get another slight leg up on the competition in your DFS and in the all-important Instagram contests. The next game is Washington and Philadelphia. The Wizards are favored by 8.5 points. The total is 214. The Sixers were blown out in their last matchup. JJ Hickson has been signed by Washington, so rejoice, rebound thieves everywhere. Your king has returned. I don't think that Hickson's going to play a big role, but the Wizards do need big men desperately, so maybe he will get on the court. He will play. It won't be enough for us to really care about, though. Gary Neal is questionable with that thigh issue that caused him to miss the last game, and TJ McConnell for the Sixers is questionable with an ankle problem also. Let's take a look at the point guards here. I get the feeling this could be a bit of a blowout also. So 9,700 for Johnny Wall, it worries me. He's been at around 36 points for the last few games, and at 9,700, he needs to go for more. And instead of playing 37 minutes, he plays 32 minutes. Then I'm a little bit concerned of him reaching value. So he's probably not the guy that I look for here. Ish Smith can't crack 30 minutes anymore. He's at 6,300. His highest score in his last five has been 31, which is not even 5x. And against John Wall, definitely not getting too excited about using him. Ramon Sessions at 3,800 put up a big game in the last one. If Gary Neal plays, definitely not keen on Sessions. He'd be, you know what? Sessions has been consistent. 17-point average across his last five, and at 3,800, that's almost 5x. He's not someone I'm going to use, but he's just a name to always keep watching if you've gone really big in other areas and go, oh, maybe I just need a $3,000 guy. And throw Sessions in, and maybe he gives you 22 points because he's got a decent chance of that compared to the other players at that salary. At shooting guard, Brad Beal's at 5,700. Hopefully this is a chance that Whitman doesn't have to play in big minutes, and they can go, all right, Brad, just play your 30 here and get in and get out. At 5,700, I'm not spending it on him, but nor am I wasting on any other shooting guards. Gary Neal, Garrett Temple, Nick Stauskas, and Alan Anderson in his second game of the season. He looked all right in the first game, and that's great for the Wizards, but he's still minimum salary. I just don't think that he's going to be worth DFSing just yet. The small forwards, Bob Cove has dropped to 4,700. He's always a chance to go big, so I never rule him out of a tournament, but not trusting for cash. And 4,900 for Otto Porter has just been miserable of late. I don't think I want much to do with him. The other guy I look at is Hollis Thompson. He's at 3,700. He's averaging 21 points over his last three, had 25 in the last game. He gets hot, and he stays hot for runs of games. At 3,700, I wouldn't be totally averse to throwing him into a lineup and using it to balance out the rest of the guys, because he can put up stats occasionally. At power forward, Markieff Morris is at 52. He put up 22 in the last game. He hasn't been great, admittedly, since coming to Washington, but everything is trending upwards, and that is probably the best thing that you can say about him, and that's not a terrible thing to say, because if it's all trending upwards, eventually the shot's going to fall, and eventually things are going to come together, and he's been contributing in multiple categories already. I don't want to use him really for DFS. I would throw him into a tournament, but that's about it, but he's not a complete stay-away-from sort of player. Nerlens Noel was terrible in the last one against Detroit, as was the whole team. he's at 6,600. It feels just a little bit high. For as good as he is in like standard seasonal leagues, the DFS value doesn't come quite as easily for Nerlens. And Jeremy Grant at 46. I'd want an injury to either Noel or Okafor to rely on him. Jared Dudley's trending down. He's at 47. I won't use him. And Nene at 4,200. Really inconsistent and not a guy that I want to rely upon either. With the center matchup, Jahlil Okafor, Martin Gortat. With Okafor, he's at 6,200. He's an okay guy to look at 6,200. He needs to get you 30 points, though. He's averaging less than that over the last five, so definitely not a guy that I'm running out to use. Martin Gortat at 7,000. I feel more comfortable with using him. The problem is that Whitman might limit his minutes, which he does for reasons unknown a lot of the time. And against the Sixers, he might have an actual legitimate reason to do it. He's averaging 35 points across his last five. So he's got the ability to return 7,000 value. If I'm deciding between Okafor and Gortat, I would rather spend that extra 800 on Gortat because I think he's got a better chance of being able to return value than what Okafor does. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Toronto Raptors. The Cavs are favored by 2. The total is 208 points here for this one. Iman Shumpert is questionable. He's really the only injury concern we have in this game. There's a couple of guys I really like here. Kyrie at 7,400. He dropped 41 in the last game. I get the feeling that this game is going to be really closely contested. The spread tells us that. But just the fact that it's 1 versus 2, the Raptors are going to want something to prove something. The Cavs are going to want to prove something as well. Irving should get 35, maybe 38 minutes, you know, up big amounts. And I think that that's going to mean 40 points for him. And that's easily obtaining value. So I think he's one of the better point guards to look at. Corey Joseph, on the other hand, has been productive. He's averaging 23 across his last five. And at 4,300, that's basically 5x value right there. So if you can get him into a lineup at that cheap salary and get a guaranteed 5x, I think you're pretty happy with it. Kyle Lowry at 8,800. You've got to spend 1,400 less to get Kyrie Irving. Irving's numbers are a bit more up and down, definitely. And look at his average, but it is impacted by a 4.7 point game he had where he had that bed bugs issue. Lowry has been consistently good, averaging just a bit under 40. His lower score has been 32. But if I'm saving $1,400, and I think overall we expect them both to get, our projections have Lowry at 39.7. They have Irving at 35. I would prefer Irving under that situation when I'm saving that much more salary. The shooting guards, DeMar DeRozan is at 8,100. He dropped 44 in the last game. I think he's going to be primed for a pretty decent game as well, especially if Iman Shumpert sits. Now, if Shumpert plays, that's more defense on the wings. Now, that might restrict DeRozan somewhat, but it doesn't have a huge impact, I don't think. J.R. Smith at 4,900, tournaments and tournaments only. He dropped 31 today, but he'd previously been averaging just 16. Yeah, that's all you can rely upon him for. Iman Shumpert, Terrence Ross, no real great need to discuss too much about them. LeBron, 9,900, under 10,000, LeBron is always appealing. LeBron, 46-point average across his last five, and at less than 10,000, can he get 50 points? I don't feel like it's crazy. The Raptors have been restricting small forwards decently. James Johnson is a pretty good defender. He's not able to stop LeBron, but he's a good defender. I'm okay with using LeBron, especially if I've chucked some of those other cheaper players in there, like a Corey Joseph or like a Ramon Sessions as a cheap point guard, and getting some expensive players in there like LeBron. And no other real small forwards worth talking about in this one. At the power forward position, we've got Patrick Patterson at 3,700. I'd throw him into a tournament. That's really about it with him because it's a real low salary and the minutes have been way up, but he doesn't produce all that often. He's boom or bust. Kevin Love at 7,200. I think that he is a really decent guy to look at here. The Raptors have been pretty good defending power forwards, but 7,200 for Love, I think that 35 points is definitely within reach for him. So he's a nice play. Tristan Thompson, I'm not using. No chance. No chance whatsoever. And Channing Frye at 3,700. Big game from him in the last one. Not sure he dropped 16 in 15 minutes like he did in that game, but in a tournament, I think you would be able to keep yourself fairly a contrarian by adding Channing Frye to a lineup. At center, Jonas Valanciunas at 6,500. It's too expensive against the Cavs team who just really reduces center's outputs. Plus, we don't know what sort of minutes he's going to get. Bismack Biyombo, Timofey Mozgov, no real interest in those guys for me. The Orlando Magic and the New York Knicks is the next game up. The spread has not been released just yet for this one. Injury-wise, not really much to talk about, which is why I'm not really sure why the spread's not out unless there's some rumblings on Victor Oladipo's thigh or Carmelo Anthony's knee. Let's hope there's nothing happening there. The point guards in Orlando, Brandon Jennings, CJ Watson, Lord Alfred Payton, I can't trust any of them. This matchup is awesome, though, for all of them. I would throw 5,300 of Alfred Payton into a tournament and see what happens. I would throw 3,800 of Brandon Jennings into a tournament and see what happens. The matchup is too good, but in cash, no chance. Jose Calderon, on the other hand, he's at 4,200. He dropped 33 in the last game. We don't know what Kurt Rambis is going to do. Is he going to play 33 minutes, Jose Calderon? Is he going to play 21 minutes, Jose Calderon? That means, again, we can't rely upon him for cash. And I probably wouldn't use him in a tournament, to be honest. I'd rather use Alfred or Brandon Jennings. At shooting guard, Evan Fournier feels almost as consistent as they come. This is a great matchup. He's at 5,500. He dropped another 31 today. He had 31 average across his last three, 31 average across his last five, a minimum score of 27. Just lock it in at 31, it feels like, for Evan Fournier. That's what you're going to get at 5,500. Bargain. Vic Oladipo at 6,900. Shot the ball terribly today, but still put up 28 points. 6,900 against the Knicks team is not terrible. There's 35-point upside definitely in him. Fine with going with him. Aaron Aflalo, he's just no good. He's also dealing with a thigh bruise as well. That's probably going to impact his ability to get rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. That was a joke. Langston Galloway is at 4,200. I don't mind Langston Galloway at 4,200. Throwing him in, you can get an extra point guard in the shooting guard spot. Throw him into a tournament, but there's definitely no cash game value there. And if you want to go really risky, throw Jimmer Fredette in. You'll lose, but just for fun. Small forward, Carmelo Anthony, 9,000. Small forwards have played decently well against the Magic lately. Melo has been playing decently well himself. I'm fine at 9,000, utilizing him. I would rather spend 200 less and use Paul George, though. I think that is a much better play than what Melo is. Mario Hezonja and Lance Thomas, the other small forwards on the board here, they're not worth really considering. Now, Kristaps
Porzingis,
he is at 6,300. 6,300, what sort of points do you want guys to get? At 6,300, you want to get about 32 points. I think that he's got a real good chance to get close to that here. He's had one stinker in the last few games where he was benched, and I was not happy with that for Kurt Rambis. Not for DFS point of view, just for the lack of logic involved in it. But otherwise, he's been getting 30-plus minutes on most nights, and I think that 30 minutes again is definitely where we're looking at again for Kristaps here. 6,300, like it. Aaron Gordon at 6,200. Oh, I like that as well. I think that Gordon is a great play. He's averaging 33 across his last three, 32 across his last five. Lock him in. 30 points feels like what he's going to get on basically most nights. His lowest score across his last five has been 30 points. His highest has been 34.7. That is tremendous value. That makes him basically a cash game power forward lock. Really just awesome production from Aaron Gordon. Jason Smith, Ersan Ilyasova, Andrew Nicholson, no thanks. And on the Knicks side of things, Derek Williams and Kevin Serafin, not much to really get too pumped about with that bunch of backup power forwards. At center, Nick Vucevic is at 8,500. Minutes were reduced today against the Warriors. Still put up 33 points. He's at 8,500. 40 points is a chance, but the Knicks have been really good at restricting centers, so I'm not sure that I want to use him in today's slate. 5,800 for Robin Lopez. Struggled in the last game, but he's averaging 30 points across his last five, so definitely not someone to be too scared off from. At 3,700 to my boy Cock, Kyle Quinn put up 28 in the last game. It's not a fluke, because I know he can do it. I think the extra minutes are a fluke, and that ridiculous production in those limited minutes is somewhat of a fluke. So not putting a huge amount of faith in Cock being able to duplicate that. The Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks, no spread release for this one either. Derrick Rose is still dealing with that hamstring issue. That's another one of those scenarios we've created, whether Derrick Rose is going to play or isn't going to play. Now, Pau Gasol is considered probable with an illness. He played the last game when he was sicker, so I imagine there's no issue with Pau there. If Derrick Rose doesn't play, Etuan Moore becomes the guy you want to look at. Mike Dunleavy gets a bump as well. If Rose happens to play, it's a really positive matchup against the Hawks. He's at 7,200. That's expensive, but he's averaging 35 across his last five. He's averaging 37.5 across his last three. At 7,200, don't hate it. On the flip side, his opponent, Jeff Teague, at 6,200. This could be a game where Teague is able to go pretty big. Now, I'm not overly excited about using Teague, but he definitely comes into consideration against Derrick Rose, which is not a great defensive matchup. 5,300 for Dennis Schroeder. He's been awesome, averaging 29.5 over his last five games. To me, he's more of a tournament option, not a cash game option. I don't have much faith in his in the stability of being able to, him out being able to produce now 35 points in 20 minutes, which he did. He got 29 points in 18 minutes in the last game. That is not sustainable. So yes, it can happen, but it's not like I'm banking on this in a cash game format. Shooting guards, Etuan Moore is at 4,600. I feel like he's a cash. Even look, Rose does play, doesn't play. I think that Moore is fine for cash and tournaments. There's something he might have a stinker, but I'm okay with using him. Kyle Korver's at 3,900. He is a tournament option. His average across the last three is just 15. He's had a couple of stinkers in there, including the last game, but at 3,900, I think you can afford to use him. Tony Snell at 3,600 would be a tournament option if Rose misses. He played well. He scored 23 points, and that doesn't seem like much, but at 3,600, that's definitely enough. Small forwards. Thabo Sefolosha is at 3,600. No thanks. Mike Scott is at 3,600. Getting warmer, especially against the Bulls front court, but probably not. Mike Dunleavy is at 3,700. Now I'm getting interested. Dunleavy's minutes have ramped up every single game, and I think if Rose misses, we see a couple of extra from Dunleavy, and maybe we get 25 points out of him at 3,700. He is in consideration for me as a real cheap punt small forward option. Kent Bazemore at 4,500, no thanks. And 3,900 for Dougie McDermott. He's averaging 25 across his last three. He dropped 22 in the last game, but I'm still not convinced that it's going to happen for him again. At 3,900, he'd be in consideration for a tournament, but not all that excited. At power forward, Paul Millsap against the Bulls. This has got 45-50 point upside written all over it. 7,800, love him here. Bob Portis at 4,100, he's a tournament only option. Taj Gibson at 5,300 was great in the last game, put up 39 points, but he'd been pretty poor before that, so I'm not all that excited about using Taj. At center, same story as with Millsap, Al Horford, big men against the Bulls. Horford's at 7,800, he dropped 66 in the last game against the Warriors. He's averaging 41 across his last five. 7,800, we're looking for another 40 point performance from him. Pau Gasol is at 9,000. He's averaging less than Horford over his last five and over his last three. He's a little bit more consistent, but you're spending $1,200 extra. Not sure I'd make that investment. Denver Nuggets at Dallas Mavericks is the next game up. The Mavericks are favored by five. The total is 208.5 points. Darren Williams is going to play. He's dealing with a finger issue. Jameer Nelson has been upgraded to probable with his wrist, so he is likely to play as well. Interesting to see what they do with Nelson with DJ Augustine there. Darren Williams is at 5,900. He basically feels like that 30 points is something he's going to get on most nights at this stage anyway. The Nuggets have got a negative ease for point guards, but it doesn't scare me off using Darren here. He's averaging 34 across his last five games, and that's pretty good at 5,900. Emmanuel Mudiay at 5,400. There's a chance that having Nelson and Augustine there means that he loses maybe 2, 3, 4 minutes. I don't really think that's a massive likelihood, but I don't want to risk it in a cash game. Ray Felton at 4,800. Big game from him in the last one, putting up almost 32 points in 33 minutes. I don't imagine he gets that sort of run again, though. And DJ Augustine at 3,500. With Nelson back, it limits his ability to be a punt option, I think. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews at 4,200. He's had two decent games in a row, but they haven't yielded massive fantasy scores. But he is coming back into consideration now for cash games. Will Barton at 5,900. That is too expensive given his minutes and production. And Gaz Harris at 4,800. Positive matchup for him, really, really good matchup. He dropped 29 in the last game to average of 22.5 over his last five. He's not the best option. I probably wouldn't use him. At small forward, Danilo Gallinari is at 6,800. He's dropped, which is good, but the production has also dropped off, which necessitated the salary drop. He's an okay guy to look at here. I'd probably rather spend the 400 less and get Chandler Parsons, who's been averaging 27 across his last three. Not a good game from him in the last one, but he was really limited with minutes. I imagine he goes back up and he's got 30 point upside here, definitely. Power forwards, Ken Faried was big in the last game in limited minutes, but I don't trust his ability to go for 38 points in 23 minutes. Dirk at 6,800. feels just a bit expensive. Yes, he was big in the last game, and this matchup's really positive, so that if you're going to use Dirk, this is probably the opportunity to use him, but I still wouldn't be all that excited. Darrell Arthur, David Lee as the backups, no thanks. At center, Yusuf Nurkic did not play the last two games. Coach's decisions, 3,700, no. But Nikola Jokic at 5,800, I really like him. He's got 26 points in the last game, a 37 average across the last three. He's had one stinker in there which really skews his five-game average. But at 5,800, I think that 30 points should be the goal for Jokic against Zaza Pachulia, David Lee, front court. There's some value there. Speaking of Pachulia, he's at 5,700. I would much rather take Nikola Jokic and spend that extra $100 than I would on Jokic, than I would on Pachulia. Joffrey Lavernier at 3,600. There's always a chance that he gets hot, so he is not out of consideration for tournaments. But when you're sort of locked into a backup role and it takes a couple of things to go wrong for you to get in, then I'd probably go a different direction. The Clippers and the Kings, no spread release for this one. Chris Paul was dealing with a couple of injuries in the last Clippers game. He played through them, but let's just wait and see there. Otherwise, I love him in this one. He's at 9,800. He's against the Kings, which is terrible defensively. Rondo's terrible defensively. The Kings are a mess defensively. Their pace is up. Chris Paul at 9,800. 50 points should be the goal for him. And there's no real reason why he shouldn't get it. 5,100 for Darren Collison against his former team. Yeah, he's been good, but Chris Paul and the Clippers shut things down for the backcourt. And same for Rajon Rondo. They shut him down. Now, 9,000 for Rondo, it's pretty expensive, and he's been producing, you know, awesomely, averaging 45 across the last five. But I think the matchup makes me go to a different direction here. At shooting guard, I don't mind JJ Redick. He's at 4,900, and he gets the benefit of playing the Kings. Jamal Crawford also does. He's at 5,000, but his minutes have been reduced the last couple of games, so I'd stick with Redick here. The Kings shooting guards, Ballinelli, McLemore, James Anderson, Seth Curry. No thanks on any of those guys. Small forwards, 4,400 for Wes Johnson. Really good matchup for him. I'm okay with using him at 4,400. He only needs to give you 30 points. Sorry, he doesn't even need to give you 30. He gives you 22 points. Bang, you're set at 4,400. I think that there's a big chance he gets that because his minutes haven't been reduced significantly since Jeff Green arrived. Rudy Gay, on the other hand, at 7,100 for the Kings. Yeah, probably not for Gay. Jeff Green, no thanks. Omri Caspi did not play the second half at all due to a coach's decision, so that inspires zero confidence in me for this one. With the power forwards, seriously, the only two power forwards on the board who are going to play are Willie Cauley-Stein and Quincy Acey, and they have no DFS appeal. At center, there is DFS appeal here. 10,700 for Boogie Cousins, who's averaging 53 across his last three games. Fine with using him. It is expensive, but you 50 points coming from him is not going to be a surprise. DeAndre Jordan at 8,500. I would rather have Cousins than Jordan. Jordan's still an okay guy to look at, especially in this sort of game against the Kings. He's a chance for some big rebounding numbers and some pretty decent block numbers as well. At 8,500, can he get you to 42 points? He's averaging 41 across the last five, so yes he can. Memphis and the Lakers, the last game of the night in Los Angeles, this one. The Grizzlies are favored by 4.5. The total is 210 points. Injury-wise, nothing to be really too concerned about. D'Angelo Russell at 52 played really well in the last game against Memphis, dropped 38 points. He is in play. Mike Conley, on the other hand, at 6,900, he is also in play. He had 43 in 29 minutes. So both of these point guards could very easily be rostered, and both could return in excess of 5x value. At shooting guard, Jordan Clarkson's at 6,200. He's been playing exceptionally well. The Grizzlies couldn't stop him in the last game. They might be a little bit more successful here, but I still think that 30 points is a goal and a very achievable goal for him. Kobe at 6,300. I'd rather spend that $100 less and take Clarkson. Tony Allen, if he plays, that knee problem, don't love using him. And Lou Williams is at 5,300. Lou's not a terrible option, just for a solid cash game, 5 to 5.5x value option, but he can probably do better. Small forwards. Matty Barnes was great the last time out, almost went to 40 points. The matchup is still as enticing. His salary is risen marginally up to 5,000, but it doesn't steer clear or keep me away from using him. I think he's a great option to use, cash and tournaments. Vince Carter, if Tony Allen doesn't play, I don't mind using him at 3,800, but it'd have to be because you've surrounded him with a lot of other high-priced guys, and no one else in the small forward market really interests me. At power forward, Zach Randolph at 6,500 or Julius Randle at 61. I think that Randle's the worst defender, so I think that Randolph at 6,500 has a real chance to go for 30-plus points here. He's in play. Randle is also in play, but I would rather spend up that extra $400 and get Zebo. Brandon Bass at 3,900, getting consistent mid-20s minutes. If Larry Nance doesn't play, he could rise to 25-26. And at 3,900, if he gets you 20 points, you're set. And he's averaging 21 in the last three and over 20 in the last five. Jermichael Green is also interesting. He's at 4,200. He dropped 25 in the last game. He's been a little bit up and down, but he's shown a knack to getting fantasy stats. And at 4,200, you can use him in a tournament and be a little bit excited about it. Brandon Wright's at 3,700. I think his minutes go up again. He dropped 26 in the last game against the Lakers. We know there are no great shakes defensively anywhere on the court, especially against big men. Can he get you another 25 points at 3,700? Sure, that is definitely within the realms of possibility. So he could be a really nice tournament punt option, Brandon Wright. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now. At point guard, Corey Joseph, 43. Kyrie Irving, 74. And Chrissy Paul, 9,800. At shooting guard, JJ Redick, 49. Jordy Clarkson, 62. And DeMar DeRozan, 81. At the small forward position, Mick Dunleavy, 37. Matty Barnes, 5,000. And Paulie George, 8,800. Power forwards, Brandon Bass, 39. Miles Turner, 58. Paul Millsap, 78. And the centers, Brandon Wright, 37. Nikola Jokic, 58. And Al Horford, 7,800. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Make sure you are checking out basketballmonster.com. I am almost finished the dynasty rankings. They've just had one last pass over just to make sure that I haven't stuffed anything up. I'm sure that I will have missed someone. And once I do release the dynasty monster board, I encourage all of your feedback on Twitter at redrock_bball. On the forums at Basketball Monster or in the player comment section, wherever, or on Facebook, go and comment towards me there and let me know what you think of the dynasty rankings. The problem with dynasty rankings in doing them is that every team in every league is exceptionally different. If you're competing now, if you're building for the future, your punt strategies, all that sort of stuff, the rankings, and I'm very much anti-rankings myself anyway, because once you're outside the first round, everything gets based on what you're trying to do with your team and how your team looks. And you can throw a blanket over guys 40 to 90 most of the times, depending on what you need. And that's why I'm very anti-rankings. And you had this guy ranked here and you had this guy ranked here. And it's undoubtedly going to happen and people have a real thirst for rankings. So I'm going to keep doing them, but they have to be taken with lots of caveats and how am I building this team? What am I trying to do? Am I doing it now? Am I doing it for the future? Am I valuing these positions or these punt strategies and all that sort of stuff? It all comes into play and it makes it a very, very hard task to do. But make sure you're checking it out once it goes up. Of course, all the podcasts and articles on hardwoodparoxysm.com, and join in the daily contests on Instagram and Facebook. Facebook.com/redrockbasketball and Instagram is at redrock_bball. Twitter is redrock_bball as well. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.